the news and information about every player, coach, and team in the National Hockey League. This is the Hockey Today Podcast. From ESPN.
Hey, everybody. Oh, lots of news going on around the hockey world, and we are all over it at Hockey Today, the podcast. Pierre LeBrun and I are going to chat coaching change in Boston. We're going to talk potential relocation on a number of fronts, and we're going to hear from Peter Budaj, a man, for my money, who should definitely be in the Vezina Trophy discussion. Oh, my friend, Pierre, I wish that we had the live sound. Keep typing, actually. I want you to keep typing in the background because it's like it's like the old newsroom, right? Because you and I, well, I won't speak for you, but I'm old enough. When I started in the business, there were typewriters in the newsroom. So you go into work in the morning and hear all the clacking, and people smoked at their desks at the old Windsor Star, and it was an old style thing. And just before we started to tape the podcast, Hockey Today, you were clacking away, and that's because news is happening, and it's an exciting part of the NHL season. And unfortunately for Claude Julien, things are happening to both the well respected coach and the Boston Bruins. As the Bruins now, for the second week in a row, we have a team making a coaching change. Of course, St. Louis last week dismissing Ken Hitchcock and replacing him with coach in waiting Mike Yeo. And now it's Claude Julien, Bruce Cassidy taking over. Presumably, I assume that that by next season there'll be a new head coach in Boston. But Claude Julien on the coaching market now. And I wonder, first of all, I don't know that there's that much of a surprise. It's been in the wind for literally for years. There's been discussion about, where did Claude Julien fit, and with Cam Neely as president, what was the future for Julien in Boston, and sort of life and death to make the playoffs after missing the last 2 years. Any surprise for you? And maybe what does this do to the coaching market now that a guy with Claude Julien's reputation and his resume, Stanley Cup winner, et cetera, is now on the coaching market?
Well, first of all, I'd like to respond by your initial intro. That was a very long intro. I have many things to respond to. First of all, if I keep typing in the background, Gabe in the studio in Bristol might come over and jump off the turnbuckle at me. But I remember when I started in the business at the old Maple Leaf Gardens here in Toronto, you used to have to file your story through the phone coupler, remember? Through the old rotary phone system at Maple Leaf Gardens. And I used an old Tandy, a Radio Shack Tandy machine that would give you four lines at a time on your little screen.
I know exactly what you're talking about. You couldn't move. You had to stand by the phone and make sure no one jostled it, or you had to hope that there was no storms or rain down the system, because if it did, it would disrupt the entire sending. You're old.
And literally, the internet had just started when I started covering the NHL. So a lot of people listening right now, younger than us, just shaking their head right now. But
they're like, "What?"
Claude Julien out in Boston, hardly surprising, but also hardly the problem in Boston was Claude Julien, whose team was a puck possession demon despite a roster that did not scream contender. Terrific coach. We all know he wasn't fired because of the performance of the team. This is a clash of personalities that was long in the making, bubbling for years. In fact, everyone is pretty sure on this story that back in 2011, when they won the cup, he might have been fired after the first round had they lost that series to the Montreal Canadiens. Such was, I think, the clash already at the time, between Claude Julien and we think President Cam Neely. So who knows? At the end of the day, he was there 10 years. He certainly had a terrific run there, but I would tell you right now that he's probably more relieved than anything else that you know, given all the circumstances in Boston, that, you know, he can move on now. Now we'll see what happens. I mean, he's got this year next on his contract still with Boston, paying him $2.5 million this year, $3 million next year. One of the good contracts, right? He just signed that, I think, last year, the year before. So you would think the Bruins would be more than happy to allow him to talk to other teams as soon as possible so that they can divest themselves of that financial obligation. But we'll see how it plays out here.
Now, what do you think of this Bruins team? I mean, we've spent a lot of time talking about Boston because, you know, they're one of those teams that, a little bit like Vancouver, probably not as dramatic, but, you know, when you go back to that 2011 Stanley Cup Final, an epic seven-game battle, which the Bruins, of course, ended up winning, went back to a Stanley Cup Final 2 years later. And I think, you know, you talk about the rumors of, you know, Claude Julien's potential demise as a head coach. I mean, remember when they, you know, had to come back and pull off the epic comeback against the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round. I mean, I remember watching that game actually in Pittsburgh, where I am right now, as we prepare for Sidney Crosby's assault on 1,000 points. I remember watching that game with some NHL officials, and the camera every time, you know, in that epic first round game seven, the camera kept panning back to Claude Julien. You know, like, is this Claude Julien's last game with the Boston Bruins? And of course, you know, it wasn't. They go to a Stanley Cup Finals against Chicago. For my money, one of the great finals of the last decade or so. So you're right. It hasn't, you know, this has been brewing for a long time. And I think it marks a real, you know, now the challenge is, you know, it's squarely at the feet of Cam Neely and the rest of the Boston Bruins management. Okay, what do you do next? And, you know, how do you revive this team's fortunes? Because they're a team that, they could certainly make the playoffs. The Atlantic Division's a pretty easy place. I mean, you and I might make the playoffs in the Atlantic if we had a team. But, you know, because I love your lateral movement, by the way. I think you're looking really good. So we could make the playoffs if we had a team in the Atlantic. But do you like the Bruins? I mean, what's the next step for them? I mean, I think you and I are probably both in agreement that Claude Julien's going to find a job very quickly, if he wants one. But what about the Bruins? Do you like them? You know, I watched the Leafs lose a 6-5 nail-biter. I mean, they're trapped in the 1980s, those Maple Leafs. So, you know, Ottawa's continuing to play above expectations. What do you make of the Bruins? Is this the kind of change that you think maybe, you know, sparks them into a playoff run this year?
No. This might be the anti-spark. Who knows? Maybe to some degree, the players could feel that. What would be the word? I mean, maybe the players could sort of feel that acrimony that existed there. Between upper management and Claude Julien, and maybe this clears the air for them as well. But I think they love playing for Claude Julien. I think there's no question about it. So I don't know how this sparks them. I mean, again, I know you're not a big advanced stats guy, Scotty, but Claude Julien had them maximizing. I mean, their puck possession numbers and everything else were through the roof. I don't know how you, I mean, you literally cannot top that now. So, I see them missing the playoffs, to be honest. And, you know, if not to Toronto and Ottawa, watch out for Florida, which is only 2 points behind Boston with three games in hand. Now, the five-day bye week comes at a brutal time for the Panthers because they were just starting to cook with oil finally after an uneven season and getting healthy too. But nevertheless, when they get out of their five-day bye week, I think the Panthers are a team to reckon with in that Atlantic race as well.
Yeah. Where do you like Claude Julien? And, like, you know, we don't know what other coaching dominoes will fall. Certainly lots of discussion in Dallas with the disappointing season that the Stars are enduring. And right now, as they have been for most of the season, outside the playoff bubble in the West. Do you imagine that Claude Julien gets right back in the coaching carousel, as it were? Or do you see him as a guy that maybe... No, you know, for me, one of the interesting things is, you know, Claude Julien's been part of... Olympic coaching staffs for Canada, of course, multiple gold medal championship efforts from Team Canada when you include the World Cup of Hockey in their last two Olympic Games in in Vancouver and Sochi. Maybe he's a guy that you tap. If you're Hockey Canada and the NHL does end up going back to South Korea next year, which I think will happen, do you take advantage of this like Team USA did early on with John Tortorella and name him as your head coach, because maybe he's got some time to commit to that almost like a full-time job?
All right. Well, I think Mike Babcock might have a say in that. First of all, Julian wasn't in Vancouver, just FYI for our listeners.
Right.
His first Olympic gig was in Sochi, and then you're right, he was part of the World Cup. But, I think Claude Julien probably wants to take his time here, decompress, and make sure that he doesn't rush into anything and look at the entire landscape before making his next call. And it really will be his next call. I mean, I think he's going to be in such high demand, although it's quite a who's who now suddenly. Gerard Gallant, who's, terrific coach, still sitting on the sidelines. Of course, the great Ken Hitchcock, who's going to the Hall of Fame one day. I think with Ken Hitchcock, he's going to be really picky because, at his age, I think it's got to be the right fit for him to coach again. But nevertheless, he's out there. And now Julian. Listen, it'd be shocking if George McPhee in Las Vegas did not reach out to Julian at some point just to feel him out. I don't know if that's the fit for Claude Julien. I think Claude Julien would like to win right away again. So I don't know if Vegas is a fit, but who knows? We'll see how that plays out. You mentioned Dallas. Lindy Ruff's deal is up at the end of the year. I'm not suggesting for sure that there's a separation there. I mean, him and Jim Neal have a great relationship, but it is a fact that his deal's up at the end of the year and it looks like they're missing the playoffs, so you can't discount that as a possibility. Tom Rose, the interim head coach in Florida, right? That tag has not changed as far as I can recall. Now,
yep.
The Panthers are playing well now, finally. So I'm not sure the timing would be right, but the offseason, who knows? And of course, there'll probably be other opportunities. I mean, I don't know if the Buffalo Sabres miss the playoffs. I mean, is Dan Bylsma safe? I know they're a rebuilding team, but I think the expectations are a bit higher this year than where they are.
Yep.
In Vancouver, is Willie Desjardins safe? Jim Benning, the GM, happens to be a guy that used to work in Boston with Claude Julien, right?
Yep.
Certainly no shortage of potential opportunities there.
All right. Well, it's going to be fascinating. And certainly the timing, as we are now, about 3 weeks, give or take, from the trade deadline. Interesting that we've had two coaching changes now in 2 weeks, with the Blues going to Mike Yeo and now with Boston. With the compressed schedule, the compressed standings, is it just easier to fire your coach, rather than make a move, right? I mean, it's cheaper, right, in some ways, right? You're going to pay the coach anyway. Is this an easy out for a management team looking to look like they're doing something?
I think it's hard to lump the Boston thing into anything else. I think there is no comparison to what's happened in Boston, I think, because of all the things we already talked about. So
right.
I think that's a standalone situation that you can't lump in just because of the history there, with what was bubbling to the surface there in Boston.
Yeah.
I don't know if the record even matters. I mean, I suppose if they were first in the Atlantic, obviously it's impossible to fire Claude Julien, but it didn't take much else, right? I mean, here they are again with a lot of positive statistics other than being on the playoff bubble, and they still fired him. So, I think it's only partly performance, and it's got a lot to do with other things.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk more about me, because that's, as you know, one of my favorite topics. And in Pittsburgh, as Sidney Crosby, as you and I are chatting, 3 points away from 1,000. So, earlier, as you know, I was in Washington, had lunch with Alexander Ovechkin just before he got to 1,000 points. Like, is there a way to compare, think of Ovechkin, and I think a lot of us, we imagine or we think historically of those two players, Crosby and Ovechkin, coming into the NHL at the same time and having such an impact on the game and on their respective franchises. But when you think of Sidney Crosby, and you think about what he's accomplished, and you think, he's at, almost at 1,000 points, 752 games, give or take, and What do you think when you think of Crosby? And how important is the 1,000-point milestone for you?
You know, I mean, and by the way, people should really check out your piece when we run it. It's terrific. But
see, that's the great segue, right? That's all.
I think the first thing I think of is that I think we were so worried as a hockey community for Sidney Crosby when the concussion started, and I think the first thing that comes to mind is that it's just been such a joy to see him come through that wilderness and the uncertainty the last few years and again, put his stamp on being the best player in the world and putting up unbelievable numbers, winning another Stanley Cup and putting that other stuff behind him. That's what comes to mind for me is that that he wasn't denied this moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that certainly comes to mind. But you talked about the comparison with Ovechkin, and I say this with complete respect for Alex Ovechkin, but I'm not sure you can, I guess, because two Stanley Cups and two Olympic gold medals belong with one guy, not the other, right? I mean, I'm not trying to be harsh, but that's just a... again, the Crosby-Ovechkin comparison is lopsided when it comes to team achievement. Obviously, when it comes to individual trophies, the trophy cases are pretty similar, if not actually in Ovechkin's favor, I think. But I think Alex would be the first guy to tell you that he knows what 87 has in his trophy case, and he's pretty envious of it.
No, I was just looking at the scoring race, and as you and I are chatting, Crosby is 1 point behind Connor McDavid. Now, he's cruising along at a 1.31 points per game rate this year. Like, it's incredible what he's doing. He leads the NHL in goals. He's got 30 in 45 games. It was fun to talk to Sidney Crosby, and certainly in the last few years, I always found him to be very, just more comfortable in his skin and more comfortable in being introspective and, he's just a very thoughtful guy. But I think even more now, and I think when you talk to people around the team, having won the second Stanley Cup last spring and all of the issues, you mentioned the cloud that hung over him for so long, even at the start of this year, right? He missed a few games with a concussion sustained in training camp.
After an unreal World Cup.
Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, playoff MVP follows it up with MVP performance of the World Cup of Hockey, just like an absolute dynamo. And he has not let up a bit, but he talked about, the idea of having kids and, how long will he play? His current contract takes him until he's 37. He's already thinking, okay, so what happens then, right? I mean, he's a young man. He's not even 30 yet. But when you think about what he's accomplished, and then he's probably he's closer to the end of his career than he is to the start. And that's a little. And again, talk about being old and think back to typewriters. I mean, having been at Crosby's first game in New Jersey in 05-06, we are getting old. Like time is relentless, and it's relentless when it comes to Sidney Crosby too. But let me ask you this then. So we talk about, to me it's one of those great things. You throw Brent Burns in the mix, and like what an interesting year in terms of the Hart Trophy. Where's Crosby in that mix for you when you think about, okay, in 2 months or whatever it is when you're going to cast your ballot for Hart Trophy as the league MVP? Where's Crosby finishing?
Yeah, it's a really close three-way race right now between Crosby, Burns, and McDavid. It's funny, I noticed that Burns doesn't get as much mention from a lot of our media colleagues when they, speculate the Hart. And this is not a criticism because I'm just as guilty of it most years, but you tend to always look at the top scorers and do the old, the top scorers and pick out your Hart guys. And Carey Price broke that mold a little by being one of the first goalies in a long time to win it a few years ago, and deservedly so. But, I don't know where the Sharks are without Brent Burns. It's been a bit of... the Sharks haven't been the same scoring team. They're starting now over the last month, but in the first half of the year, the Sharks were not the same scoring team as last year. And Brent Burns was among the top scoring players in the league, period, never mind defensemen. I mean, he really carried that team. And so I hope that Burns gets more consideration than he seems to be getting, because I think he deserves it. But again, when you look at Sidney Crosby after missing the first couple of weeks, he's been a one-man wrecking crew and points per game, the best in the league, and so consistent. And decided this year, what the heck, I'll score more goals, you know. Why not? I mean, you know, he's bored. He decided to do something new. It's really amazing. Over the course of Crosby's career, there's always been these interesting nuances to the growth of his game. Remember when he was really young, he came back and wanted to work on his faceoffs and became one of the best faceoff men in the league. His backhand, it's always been one thing after the other in terms of being great. Has never been good enough for Sidney Crosby. He wants to better himself, and that is not the case for every great player. And, that's not a criticism, but there are a lot of great players who, you know, pretty happy with being one of the best and maintain a very good level that way throughout their careers. But Crosby's one of those self-starters that wants to bring it to the next notch every year.
Well, and I think when you talk to, you know, I think we tend to, I don't know whether we gloss over it, but it's you know, sometimes we lose perspective on, you know, what the Penguins have accomplished over the last calendar year. And certainly Mike Sullivan deserves a lot of credit as the head coach there. And Jim Rutherford, the GM, had a chance to chat with him just sort of casually in the stands yesterday while the Penguins were practicing. But, you know, there have been so many young players who've come in and out of that lineup. I mean, they're a team that has, like every other team, has dealt with a lot of injuries. You know, Connor Sheary's out long term. I mean, Carl Hagelin's been nicked up. They have a goaltending issue that isn't going to go away until they resolve what's going to happen with Marc-Andre Fleury. And they're right there. And I think they're a team that you have to put in your group of potential Stanley Cup contenders, and a team that has the wherewithal to do what history tells you can't be done, which is to win back-to-back Stanley Cups. And I think you're absolutely right on, Pierre. I mean, it comes from that leadership group, and Sidney Crosby is the engine that drives that. And he works so hard, and he is so devoted to being better and to, you know, to setting a standard. You know, not, you know, that's just the way he's built. And you're right, not everyone's built that way. And I think that's, you know, it's been fun to watch him evolve as a player. And as I say, you know, very sort of, there's a zenness about him now, I think, having won that second Stanley Cup. And, you know, I think he talked a little bit about it when we were chatting yesterday, this idea that you have to do it the exact same way. Like, you know, mm-hmm. they were looking to replicate what happened in 2009 all those years. And he's like, you know, you can't do it that way. You just got to do it a different way. And, you know, they did it last year with a bunch of kids in the lineup. And, you know, and they'll do it again with a very young lineup if they're going to do it. And I always like to draw parallels between Sidney Crosby and myself, and that's why I've like started to use capitals in most of my sentences now. And you know, like you know, like to focus on different parts of the writing game. So
yeah, you know, I was chatting with Jim Rutherford, the veteran GM of the Penguins, recently, and apropos of nothing, we were talking about something completely different, and unsolicited, he got on to Crosby and was just saying how much he has marveled. You know, for years he was on the outside in Carolina looking at this young Sidney Crosby and, you know, wondering what he was all about. And Jim Rutherford was saying he just marvels at how Sidney Crosby handles himself on and off the ice and his impact in the room and on the organization and just everything he does. Jim Rutherford's never seen anything like it. And so, you know, I mean, I know you would say, well, what else is he going to say? But my point is that this was a genuine, strong reaction from a guy who's been around the game for many, many decades. And I think that speaks volumes.
True that. Well, I was a little disappointed you didn't mention my own contributions to, you know, being, you know, using verbs and stuff like that. But anyway, luckily for you, you have an entire second segment of Hockey Today, the podcast, and to get in there and start pumping my tires. I feel like a little bit like Roberto Luongo now, back in the playoffs. You know, pump my tires up, my friend. You got time. You got time in the second segment. So don't go away, because, in fact, we will return in exactly 1 minute with the second segment of Hockey Today, the podcast. We're going to hear from Peter Budaj. Maybe, for me, one of the great stories of this NHL season. So we're going to hear from Peter in the second segment of Hockey Today, the podcast. So don't go away. All right, Pierre LeBrun, here we go. Second segment, Hockey Today, the podcast. I don't know how you feel about Peter Budaj and the Los Angeles Kings, but really enjoyed our chat. We chatted, and I mentioned his six shutouts, blah blah blah. And of course, immediately after we get done talking, Budaj got his seventh shutout of the NHL season for the Kings. And I saw someone write it, so I can't take credit for it. But if there was a season saver award, or an award for a player who basically saves a team season, Peter Budaj might win it for what he's done with the Los Angeles Kings. And of course, Jonathan Quick going down literally, in the opening moments of the regular season. I think a lot of people assumed that the Kings would be done.
Peter Budaj wasn't even next in line when Jonathan Quick went down. People already forget that. He was in the AHL and was supposed to be in the AHL the entire season, because it was supposed to be Jonathan Quick and Jeff Zatkoff at the NHL level this year for LA. And people forget that. And yep. Zatkoff, struggled his first couple games after taking over for Quick, and bang, Peter Budaj takes the net and never looks back, and he's been sensational. In the first couple months, LA kept looking at the goalie market and looking at their options, but Budaj kept proving that they didn't have to do that, and so it's been absolutely fascinating. And now, Jonathan Quick's trying to get on the mend here. He was on the ice for the first time last week, and that'll be interesting moving forward, because I think Kings management has to know around the March 1st trade deadline where Jonathan Quick is, right? Because if they have any kind of indication that they don't think he's going to be a player for them this year, my guess is they got to go get a goalie, because Zatkoff has struggled. They got to go get a goalie to provide insurance for Budaj for a stretch run and a playoff run. I don't think they have a choice. But certainly the plan and the hope is that Jonathan Quick will indeed be back sometime in March and be ready to take over that net.
Well, and what an interesting, I'm not creating a controversy there, but, Jonathan Quick hasn't played literally since the opening moments of the regular season. You have Peter Budaj, who leads the NHL with seven shutouts. He's, sixth in wins, as you and I are chatting here, 2.02 goals against, 920 save percentage. It's like, I'm going to ask you, where is he in your Vezina trophy? The writers don't vote.
Come on. Are you serious?
Where is he in your Vezina? Wait a minute. You would scoff. How is he not? All right. Well, okay. Devin Dubnyk. All right. Terrific year. Yes. Sergei Bobrovsky. All right, Martin Jones is in there, maybe Cam Talbot. Where is Peter Budaj? Which goal, and maybe not even the Vezina, what about the Hart Trophy? Where is Peter Budaj in all of this, right?
I thought we chatted months ago about you not doing crack before we did a podcast.
I'm just saying, and I'm not just saying this because Peter Budaj was kind enough
He will not be a Vezina nominee. First of all, the GMs vote on the Vezina, and there's a big seniority aspect to it. How the votes are every year. I find it hard to believe that the three guys won't be Bobrovsky, Dubnyk, and Price. Maybe someone else in there, Martin Jones, you're right. Martin Jones deserves, but it's the in-season replacement who saves a year, I don't think he's going to get that many votes. I just feel like I know how GMs vote, right? That's just how they are. And to get to your next question about when Quick returns, if he does, but we think he is, it'll be his net. And with all due respect to Peter Budaj, it's similar to Mike Condon saved the Ottawa Senators season, by the way. But when Craig Anderson is, ready here soon, it's his net. There's no controversy there. And that's the same thing in L.A. And don't forget, the other part of Jonathan Quick's presence is similar to Carey Price in Montreal in that he's one of the captains of the team.
Yeah.
Jonathan Quick is one of the leaders with Kopitar and Doughty and Dustin Brown and Jeff Carter. Quick has a big voice in that room. I know that surprises people because he's so quiet with the media and not a great interview, but I'm telling you, when you talk to the Kings inside that room, Jonathan Quick carries a huge voice. So they've missed that a lot. And so, there's no there's no controversy here. Once he's ready to take his net over, it'll be his net.
I feel bad that you shouted me down now about Peter Budaj's worthiness as a Vezina. I'm not saying he should win the Vezina. I'm just saying he should be in the discussion for it. because that's how important he's been to the Los Angeles Kings. And you're absolutely
right. He's been very important. I mean, there's no question he's helped save their year. You're bang on with that part. But, yeah, let's try not to mention the Vezina thing too much going forward here, okay?
Okay, I would like to go back to the fact that Dave Haxtell was ripped off for not being a part of the Jack Adams final last year, and you and Craig ground me into a pile of mush after them making that point last year. So this year, I'm flying the Peter Budaj flag. That's what I'm going to do between now and voting time.
Okay.
So, and on that note, I provided my own perfect segue into our conversation with Peter Budaj. Vezina Trophy, Hart Trophy, worthy goaltender of the Los Angeles Kings. Here's my discussion with Peter. All right, here we go. Special treat on Hockey Today, the podcast. I'd like to welcome Los Angeles Kings netminder Peter Budaj. Now, Peter, you've come from the West. You're in the East now, which is my time zone as well. So, how do you find the travel going West to East? I know it always sucks the life out of me when I go to the West Coast. How do you find the travel going East?
It's pretty demanding, but you know, I think we're taken care of pretty well. You know, I think their travel and the hotels are pretty nice, so I think the team's taking care of us pretty good. But it's still, you know, you're losing 3 hours basically when you travel, so your sleep pattern is a little off, I would say, for like a day or so. So it's a little challenging, but nothing that we can't handle. You know, we're professionals, so we know how to deal with this, and they take good care of us, so it's all good.
Good. Well, and this is, you know, it's not new to you, and we're going to get around to your season with the Los Angeles Kings, but I would just maybe a more general question. How have you found the compressed schedule? I was in Los Angeles for All-Star last weekend, and we talked to a lot of the players about just, you know, maybe how it's affected them and, you know, the routines and things like that. And I wonder for a goaltender maybe especially, and you played a lot, what's the compressed schedule been like for you?
You know, it's a little different, you know, than the years that I remember. You know, it's you know, definitely with the bye week and everything. I think every game and games back to back and games in between has to be kind of compressed, as you said. So, you know, definitely has to be a little more adjustment to, you know, taking care of yourself pretty good. You know, get some good sleep and get some rest, because the travel has been definitely more demanding than past years because of the bye week, I would say. But you know, on the other hand, you get the bye week, so it's it's kind of a win-win situation, so it's pretty much the same. You know, I think it's a little more compressed, but I think with that bye week, you kind of regain, you know, regain the strength and everything else. But it can be different. You know, some teams have a bye week at the beginning of the year, some teams have a bye week at the end of the year. So it all different, you know, because it can catch you at the wrong time of the season, so it can be tricky.
Right. Now, obviously, you've been working really closely with Bill Ranford with the Los Angeles Kings, and I know when I talk to coaches, they talk about the lack of practice time, and especially for young teams, maybe that's an issue. Do you have to find special, you know, carve out special times to either just chat with Bill or to get on the ice, or do you try and take as much time, sort of downtime away from the rink, as you can? I mean, you've been in 44 games already this season, so how does it work out with you and Bill in terms of doing what you want to do?
We definitely, you know, try to do video, and, you know, we stay on top of it. But, you know, as you said, the practice time is kind of cut down a little bit, you know, so staying on maybe a little longer, having like 2 days in between games, that doesn't happen as often, because when you have it 2 days, you know, you want to kind of rest, and so most likely, you know, team's going to give you days off because you don't have the, you know, the luxury of having 2-3 days between the games. So definitely the practice time is kind of cut down. So you got to try to find a time, you know, maybe, you know, go early before practice, because there's always something to work on, you know, to see, to get better at some stuff. And, you know, that you see on the tapes and you see on a video that you want to get better at, that you know, that you had some issues with that in the game and you want to get better. So the time for practicing that, it's kind of cut down definitely. So we just got to try to find a way, you know, try to maybe get on the ice maybe 10, 15 minutes earlier before the practice, and just work with Bill. And, you know, Bill has been really good about that, and he's working very good with us, and it's really good.
Yeah, obviously, you know, this has been an interesting season for you and for the LA Kings, with Jonathan Quick being hurt literally at the start of the regular season coming out of the World Cup of Hockey, and you're coming off a tremendous season in the American Hockey League. goaltender of the year. But when you make that, when you come back to the NHL and you move right into sort of the kind of dominant role that you have, what's the biggest adjustment coming from the AHL to the NHL this season? What's that transition been like for you?
I've talked to, Bill Renfer about that, and, he made a good point. Even though AHL is really strong league and a really good league and probably the second best in the world, there's a big difference still between AHL and NHL. So, the attention of the detail that has to be that much more sharper, you have to be in NHL, because there are certain stuff that you can get away with in American Hockey League, but you can in NHL. The players are that much faster. They have better releases. They see the ice better. If there's an opening, NHL players will hit it most of the time, 9 out of 10 times. In American Hockey League, might be 5 out of 10 times. So there's those few times that you can get away with that. So that's why you have to just, and I talked to Bill, and Bill talked to me about that, and just have to, pay more attention to the detail and more repetition, and don't get, sometimes in the game you have a time that you want to take a little rest. You can't do it as much in NHL as you can do a little more in AHL. So you got to stay sharp as much as you can, because, the players are that much faster here, and, they can pick you apart.
Well, apparently whatever Bill is telling you, it's working, because as you and I are chatting, you're tied for the league lead with 6 shutouts. You've got a 922 save percentage. You're top 10 in wins with 24. Could you have imagined this kind of series, this kind of season, at the start of the year? Could you have imagined that this might have been how it would go for you?
Definitely not. Definitely not. When the season started, I got sent down to minors, and I just hoping that maybe I'm gonna get a call up maybe during the year, in case they want to give rest to Jonathan Quick or something like that. So I never even imagined that I'm gonna be playing this much, and it's just like a dream for me. Never thought that this would be happening, but obviously you never want to go in and out with somebody get hurt. It's a tough position for Jonathan Quick to get hurt. Especially he's the heart and soul for this team. He's the backbone for this team for years. And, wins the Stanley Cup, so he's a huge part of this team. And when he went down, I got up, and I was just trying to help the team to win the games and trying to stay in the playoff hunt. And that's what I'm still trying to do. Don't try to think too much, but definitely, somebody would tell me before the season that at this moment of the year in February, we would be talking like this and being in a place or spot with playing 42 games so far for the Kings. It's just amazing, and I'm so thankful for that. And I'm excited and I'm very thankful to be here, and hopefully keep working hard and keep helping Kings win games.
I'm not suggesting that you're old, but at 34 years, Peter, you've played a lot in the NHL, and I wondered, did you ever wonder if you would get this opportunity again, and maybe, where your confidence was at? It has not been a straight ride for you. There have been some ups and downs, and I wonder, are you able to enjoy maybe what's going on with you this season? Are you able to sort of reflect a little bit while you're in the middle of it, or do you try not to think of it that way?
Sometimes it comes to your mind, when you see, obviously when people talk about you and the situation that how it was, where you were 2 years ago, when you're right now, you kind of reflect to it, but you don't try to think about it too much. In my opinion, I'm just super thankful for this. And, when I got sent down to minors, to St. John's, I really wanted to get back to NHL as soon as I could. And I think that was the wrong mindset. I think that was a very wrong mindset that I had. And instead of focusing on playing, it was disappointing for me that I was down in American Hockey League and I was just focusing on the wrong things instead of focusing on, on the process and trying to win the games. And then when I didn't have a contract, and 2 years ago when I came to the camp in Kings as a tryout for PTO, I just told myself, I was going to go out here, and show everybody I can still do it. And if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. And, thank God, I get blessed and everything fall into place for me. And I was able to play many games in American Hockey League for Ontario Reign, and it was great. And it just, I think the mindset was a little better I was excited about that. And I think I wasn't thinking about if somebody's going to give me a chance, you know, being a backup here or starter. I just wanted to play and show everybody that I can still do it, and I guess I still have a passion for the game, and I still want to win and help the team to win a game. So, I literally, you know, I know you've heard it so many times, and it sounds like a cliche and it sounds like an old record, but it is literally you take one game at a time, and if you do that, and if you can do that, that will help your focus to focus on the right things instead of the wrong things.
Nice. Now, you grew up in Slovakia. How did you become a goalie? What was the? I always think goalie stories are the best. So, how did you become a goalie?
It's a funny story, I guess. I mean, it's not really funny, but I think it's kind of interesting. I was watching a hockey game. It was Canada, I guess, Russia back in the day. Like, I don't know, like I was, I think, 3 years old or 4 years old. I remember the game till now, till this moment. And I know that Canada ended up beating Russia. And then I told my dad that I want to be a goalie. I want to be a player in Canada. And I was a kid. And my dad obviously was thinking, yeah, kids, you know, kids like a lot of things. And I just keep talking to him and keep bugging him. So he took me on the ice when I was four, and I started playing when I was five. Basically, the first time ever I put a skate on was I was 4 years old, and then as a teen I was 5 years old, and then I went straight to net. I never wanted to play out, and just being a goalie, I guess, and I enjoyed it since then.
Good stuff. And with that, Peter, we'll let you get on with your day. You're in the eastern side of the United States, and I hope you get some rest and wish you continued success in your season with the Los Angeles Kings. So thanks for spending some time with us today.
Thank you very much.
All right. Now, just before we leave, my pulpit, my bully pulpit for Peter Budaj, you know, for me, one of the great parts of this story is that, you know, there's a guy, and he sort of touched on, he goes to the American Hockey League, with the St. John's club, and doesn't win a single game, right? Like, he doesn't win any games. And here he is, you know, doing what he's doing for the Los Angeles Kings, and at 34 years of age. I think it's a great story of, you know, of perseverance, and I think it's a good lesson.
He was he not the AHL goalie of the year last year, the American Hockey League,
yeah,
Manchester?
Yeah, he was the year before.
But I remember covering that Eastern Final, the year that Carey Price went down. It's so funny. There are so many interesting layers going back to that story, right? Carey Price injured in Game 1 of that Eastern Final after Chris Kreider, mistakenly collides into Carey Price, Rangers and Habs. Million different things if you go back and look at it. Number one, Devan Dubnyk was down and out and back home in Edmonton pulling the plug on his own season because he had completely lost it both. You know, in terms of his focus as a goalie, his technical, like everything. And I wrote about it this year, but that was the bottom, you know, rock bottom of the barrel for Devan Dubnyk, that he was a number four goalie at the time in the Montreal organization and wasn't in a position where he could help them when Carey Price went down. And look at Devan Dubnyk now. I mean, probably going to win the Vezina. Unbelievable comeback story. I love that story. But number two, Peter Budaj, who had done a pretty good job as the backup to Carey Price, I think for 2 years at that point, isn't the guy they go to. They go to Dustin Tokarski, the number three guy who had a bit of a look-see in March when Price had something, and Michel Therrien had a gut feeling, and I think he was right, because Tokarski actually played well in that Eastern Final. The Habs pushed out the six, right, I think, and it surprised everyone that they won two games in that series without Carey Price, but... You know, here's poor Peter Budaj. I'll never forget seeing him at Madison Square Garden at morning skates as, you know, the forgotten guy, and how well he took that as a pro and didn't complain and was a good teammate about it. I mean, that's pretty devastating, right? I mean, the point of being the backup to Carey Price is that one day you might get called upon, and they go to Dustin Tokarski, and, you know, here's Peter Budaj now saving the Kings season. Devan Dubnyk might win the Vezina. It's some interesting layers to that very moment there in 2014.
That's right. Well, not to mention your own comeback, my friend. You know, I mean, you know, some people had written you off, and here you are.
All right, As they should.
I threw that in there to make sure you were still listening to me. So, all right. So I want to know some of the other news that occurred over the last week or so. The IOC finally coming to the table and at least meeting. I know they like to qualify it as a what was the term that they used?
A courtesy visit.
A courtesy visit. Yeah. That's right.
Courtesy visit.
But does that, you know, the fact that the IOC actually came to the table, sat down with the NHLPA and the NHL, IIHF, does it give you some sort of sense that we are actually headed in the right direction, and that a year from now we will actually be talking about Canadian then U.S. lineups and all those kinds of things that we love to talk about for the Olympics in terms of the NHL?
Yeah, it was certainly important, I think, for Thomas Bach, the president of the IOC, to finally surface and to show that he cared and wanted the NHL in the Olympics. And I think that's the message that he delivered. But other than that, he really won't be, again, he won't be part of this negotiation, right? I mean, if you look at the statement that he put out afterwards, he basically said, and now I look forward to the International Federation and the NHL to hammer out a deal. I mean, that's what he's saying, is that it's up to Rene Fassel now of the IIHF and Gary Bettman of the NHL and Donald Fehr of the NHLPA to figure this out. So, you know, he dropped in, said hi, and now he's out again. But and certainly, as we move forward here, there will be more meeting, or at least more conversations and conference calls and hopefully more meetings as time goes on here. And time is certainly of the essence. But it's not going to be at the... I mean, let's make one thing clear here. It's not going to be at the impetus of the NHL. The NHL now is sitting back and saying, listen, you know how we feel? You guys need to come to us and explain to us why we need to convince our owners to go. So, I really see this as Rene Fassel and Donald Fehr spearheading this movement at this point. You know, the players want to be in South Korea. Rene Fassel wants the best players in South Korea. So those two bodies, IIHF and NHLPA, I think are going to carry the mail now and try and salvage this. And they got a bit of time. I mean, essentially, Rene Fassel, what he hinted at after the meeting last week is that he's got meetings in South Korea, I think in mid-March, where by then they really got to know what the hockey tournament's going to look like, right? He's meeting with organizers. And so I think that presents your real deadline. So they basically got a month, if not a bit less. And so we'll see. I mean, somehow the players and the IIHF have to come back to the league here, I guess, and present a set of dynamics that makes it appealing for the NHL to go.
All right. Now, you mentioned Mike Babcock. Do you assume, and you know what, I just think it's going to get done. I think the NHL, I think, A, if the IIHF has the money that they say they do to pay for, you know, the issues, the outstanding issues of travel and insurance, and yeah, if that's going to be taken care of, I don't see how the NHL now can come back and say, all those things we said were a problem for us, well, we're still not going to go. I just think it optically is too hard for them, and I still think they want to be in Beijing in 2022. So I think we're going to be
going there. For sure on that one. No question they want to be in Beijing, yeah.
So I think we're going to be there a year from now. Do you assume Mike Babcock is the head coach of Team Canada? Like, is that just, like, I mean, why not, right? I mean, all he does is win.
Yeah, I haven't asked him. I haven't asked him about thinking that far ahead yet. I know he loves the Olympics. I mean, he made a point repeatedly during the World Cup of saying the World Cup is not the Olympics, which
right,
I'm sure everyone involved in, everyone involved enjoyed. I know he loves coaching Team Canada. There's something about it that just... is checks off all the boxes for Mike Babcock. I guess the only thing going forward, or two things, you know, we don't know who would run Team Canada. You know, would Doug Armstrong be the GM again? I mean, he certainly put together the team that won the World Cup, but, you know, it starts with Hockey Canada. Who's running the team? And whoever is running the team, who does he want as coach?
Yep.
And the other question I think that has to come into play is, how do the Leafs feel about all this? Because Babcock did go to Lou Lamoriello and Brendan Shanahan before taking the World Cup job and say, hey, you guys are cool with this, right? Because the Leafs now are entering a pretty interesting phase in their build. I mean, they're becoming, you know, something.
Yeah.
They got a chance to make the playoffs this year, and moving forward past this year, they're going to start, you know, they hope certainly to be contenders, and in a hurry, they hope. So, you know, do the Olympics present, an issue that way? Probably not. And all things being equal, I can't imagine Mike Babcock would not want to be the coach again.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, that you know, when we talk about Canada, it's always the embarrassment of riches. You know, for me, the great debate moving forward is, you know, what happens with Team USA? And it's, you know, even, you know, David Ogrian is going to step down as the head of USA Hockey this summer. You know, what, you know, who fills that void there? You know, for me, you know, I you know, it would be great to see a guy like Pat LaFontaine or, you know, someone with real strong NHL ties take over that role. But, you know, on a more sort of, you know, focus level, you know, the same questions, you know, I think it's fair to say that Dean Lombardi and the management team for Team USA at the World Cup Hockey, that was a hard time, right? Team wasn't very good, didn't play very well. But so who is it? Is it Stan Bowman? Is it Ray Shiro? You know, what about a guy like Bill Guerin? Like, I mean, a guy who strong ties to the 96 World Cup of Hockey team, in a management position now for a number of years in Pittsburgh. But, you know, I think that's going to be fascinating. But what about the your head coach for Team USA? I mean, John Tortorella is going to be on the
side. I'd like to see guys like Chris Chelios and Mike Modano also. You know, get some consideration given their passionate, you know, involvement over the years as players with Team USA. And I think those guys have a lot to give back and have a notion of what a best-on-best tournament is, that's for sure. But having said that, coaching-wise, it's hard for me right now not to look at Mike Sullivan and not think that he would be the leading candidate. I mean, he just won a Stanley Cup. His team is looking like a cup contender again. His work in Pittsburgh has been absolutely top notch. Not sure how he wouldn't be a top contender. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, no, I think, you know, definitely a top contender. But, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, barring a complete collapse, that John Tortorella is going to be a Jack Adams finalist. Like, I don't know if he's going to win it or not. I mean, the Blue Jackets have, they sort of evened out after their 16-game winning streak. But they're a playoff team. They're going to the playoffs when no one thought they would. He's going to be, I think, on the final ballot for Jack Adams. And yet they're, you know, the team's performance in Toronto at the World Cup of Hockey was so disheartening. Can you go back to John Tortorella? So I ask that as a, it's not a rhetorical question, but if you're whoever is going to lead Team USA, can you go back to John Tortorella as the head coach?
I don't think he can. It's probably unfair, and it's probably dumb to judge that on three games in September. But I just, from an optics point of view, I don't think you can. I think you got to give it to someone else. Or you could name John Tortorella head coach and then replace him right on the eve of the Olympics with Wayne Gretzky.
Well, it worked out for the Metropolitan Division of the All-Star Game. So, all right, we're going to wrap up fairly short order here, Hockey Today, the podcast. But I do want to close out a discussion about, you know, NHL teams with nowhere to go, or certainly lots of doubt in the air for a number of teams. And it's funny, you know, I think when you look back to the last 5 or 6 years and you look at the stability of the NHL, and we often talk about, you know, how strong the NHL has been. And I think a lot of that strength comes from the fact that there's been more or less stable ownership, you know, around the NHL. I mean, you look, you know, certainly stable ownership in Phoenix as they've tried to get a new arena, new ownership in New Jersey and in, you know, Long Island. And, you know, you go around the NHL where Dallas over the last 5 or 6 years. And all of a sudden now you've got, you know, as you know, because you talked to Peter Kamanos, you've got the issue of what will happen with the sale of the Carolina Hurricanes now that Peter Kamanos is willing to sell the entire team or entertain selling the entire team. You've got the Islanders now already looking for a new home with the whole Barclays Center experiment blowing up in their face. You've got the Coyotes' plan to build a new arena at Arizona State University in Tempe. That's blown up, so now they're looking for Plan B. You know, is this a sort of blip in the radar, or do you look at this as a signal that maybe, you know, the NHL is, you know, going into a period where stability is, you know, maybe it's not as rock solid as it's been for the last 5 or 6 years?
I don't make more of it other than the fact that I think these things are cyclical, right? There's ebbs and flows to ownership. I mean, you see in the other sports that, you know, the Raiders are trying to move to Vegas. The Chargers have moved to L.A. in the NFL. And, You know, the NBA's had franchise moves over the last decade. I mean, it's just the ebb and flows of a pro league. I don't think much of it, but certainly it's not in as good a place now as it was, you know, 3 years ago for the NHL. I mean, there's no denying that. You know, Carolina, at the end of the day, it's you don't just click your heels and say, here's your new owner in Carolina. I think it's going to take some work to find an owner to want to buy that team and give it the kind of support it needs. So let's not sugarcoat that situation. I still think the team stays in Carolina. I'm just saying it's going to take some work.
Sure.
The Islanders, I know it's complicated, but I mean, that team is never leaving the New York area. They'll figure that out over the course of time. I think the Coyotes are the most precarious situation, in my opinion. I think that they had a lot invested in that Tempe deal. I think that was a major body blow for them to lose that deal. I know everyone is saying the right things, and I know that the league right now, I think the league has been in communication with ownership, and I think they're confident that there are other options that ownership can look at, and that one of those will materialize. But let's not fool ourselves. That was a big, big news story last week that deal fell through. So I think all eyes for sure, I think, on the Coyotes right now.
Now, you get the vibe you're in Montreal quite often. You do work for French language broadcasters. I mean, is there a palpable sense of, you know, is one of these the domino that finally sees the NHL returning to Quebec City? I mean, does it change? Do you get a sense that, you know, that this is maybe what the NHL has been waiting for in terms of, you know, how to, you know, a plan B for, you know, franchise A, B, or C to move into Quebec City? Or is it too premature?
Well,
premature to say that.
Yeah, who knows? There's so many things that happen behind closed doors. You get told everything. But my understanding is I don't think there's been this constant dialogue between the NHL and the would-be owners in Quebec City really since September, I think. Yeah. So it hasn't been this constant every month check-in on them. You know what I mean? Which tells me that it's not really on NHL's radar right now, although it certainly could be one day. The other thing that, I mean, listen, I would love to see a team in Quebec City. I've been to that rink, and that is a gorgeous rink. We all know about the market and the passion there. I think it would be terrific. I don't know about the corporate support, but it wouldn't be any worse than a lot of markets we have now. Now, having said all that, when you look at the three situations we just talked about, again, I think Arizona is the most volatile right now. And that's the one team that really doesn't do Quebec much good, I think, because at the end of the day, there still is the issue of the NHL not wanting a 17th team in the Eastern Conference, right? The balance of the conferences is the NHL, did they not spell that out as part of their reason why they rejected the Quebec expansion bid when Vegas got a team? I mean, I think they talked about that. I mean, geographically, it hurt Quebec City that there was a 16-14 split in the conferences, now with Vegas at 16-15. But what I'm saying is it would be a lot more advantageous for Quebec City if it's Carolina that fell apart here, you know, through the sale process, because that's a team in the East. So that's the point I would make on that.
Yeah. No, there's no question. I mean, there are so many things that have to happen, and I think you are absolutely right. It's hard to imagine the Islanders franchise going outside of New York, and you know, I was a little disappointed. You know, I thought we might hear a little brass bonanza from you during the podcast here, with the idea of the state of Connecticut wooing the Islanders to Hartford. At least
that was pretty funny. You know, I'm told that the Islanders never didn't even know that was coming. Eh?
Like, I know.
They just that letter came out, and they were as surprised as the rest of us. Apparently. But not a bad thing to be wanted. If I'm the Islanders now and I'm trying to figure out what the heck I'm doing, you might as well once in a while point out the interest in Hartford as you try to leverage your way into something else. That's what I would do.
That's right. Exactly. All right, my friend. Well, lots of news to happen as we get towards the trade deadline in the NHL. So always good to catch up with you, my friend. And, you know, as we always talk about at this point of our Hockey Today, the podcast, people should go to iTunes and go and give us a listen, give us a rating. It's a good place for the hockey community to come. They've got nice couches there, and All right, I made that part up. I don't. There's no couches there, but you should go and rate the podcast and go and join in with other hockey fans on that. And you and I will reconvene a week or so from now, and we'll do it all again. But Pierre LeBrun, as always, fine work, and thanks for hanging out a bit today.
Sounds good.
We'd like to thank you for listening to today's show. For more great podcasts, check out the Pod Center page at ESPNRadio.com.